I'm motherfucking alive.
So crank that funk, you should do a living.
Oh shit, are we sound checking?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Oh, sorry.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that's here to talk about Sasquatch, who is Bigfoot, who is Crystal, who is T-Rex, who is Bananarama, who is Jared.
That is not the bit I thought you were going to go with.
Oh, what did you think it was going to be?
The people who are were back on the show that runs it like a gang or whatever.
Mm. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, who are you?
Not Randy, thankfully. Hey, we'll get into it more, but is Randy a little racist? It feels like Randy might be a little racist. Whoops.
What makes you say that, Jared?
Whoops. I would like to retract every comment I have said, or retract, rather, every comment I have said about liking Randy, as he has made himself awful over the last three episodes.
It kind of devolves into this spiral of like, oh, it's this grumpy old man. He's kind of fun. And then as we go further, you're like, oh, wait, I don't know how much of this I like.
It's everything in life is community. And it's also like, oh, yeah, we are in a community. But I mean the TV show in this case. And you haven't seen it.
I have seen.
You've seen like some episodes.
Yeah, like 2/3 of it.
Okay, does that include the trampoline episode?
I could not remember. This was okay. Years ago.
Well, there's a bit in that where like it gets to the end and the guy like says something like completely racist. So, like, oh, that's the last time I trust a black person again. And Joel McHale and Donald Glover are like, that came out of nowhere. And then Joel McHale goes, did it though? And it shows flashbacks of scenes that we didn't get of him like saying, or some that we did where it was like a land free of whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, under new context. And then one where it's a square tattooed on his chest that like clearly was a swastika that he like got the lines filled in. Yikes. To be a square. And that's kind of what it feels like with Randy, where it's like, oh, because you had all these problems with GC that we didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that some of those were racial because GC kind of sucked. Anyway, we'll get more into that.
It's such a thin line where you're like, I don't know that I can outwardly say that, but boy.
But the dog whistle became a blowhorn.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Anyway, Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing all right. We have come to a momentous occasion in this household. We turned on the AC.
Oh, wow. I thought you'd wait till July. You're a stubborn old man.
I'm not a stubborn old man. If it's uncomfortable, I don't want it. Like, I'm not going to sit in uncomfortable.
You are the person that's like, no, the thermostat must stay at 72 degrees.
No, please. Like, if people are uncomfortable, please tell me. I want to change it. But if we don't need it on, then I'm going to leave it off.
Okay.
Like, I enjoy the 2 weeks most in Chicago where you can leave your thermostat off. Like, it doesn't have to be on heat or cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of lived in that for the last little bit.
See, I don't have central heating or central air.
Uh-huh.
I have a window, a really nice window unit, to be clear. It's one of those that, like, they build it into the side of the building almost,
mm-hmm.
Where a window would be. And it works really well. And forced air through, like, baseboards. I don't have to fuck with shit. It's almost, there are a couple times where it gets a little dicey. But for the most part, that's just kind of how I live. I think central heat might be overrated. Hot take?
You might be right. I like central heat because then I can control what I need to control. But
I should also mention, because this is a very Chicago thing.
Yeah.
Or, like, other big cities thing. But, like, the radiator heat mm-hmm. is what I'm talking about. I'm not just talking about having no heat whatsoever.
To be clear. I'm cool with radiator heat as long as I have control over my individual radiator.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Chicago apartments where the radiator is controlled by the landlord, and then you're either like all right, this is too hot or it's too cold and I can't do anything about it.
The only ones I've had problems with that is when they turn on the boiler or not. And usually in my experience, that hasn't been a landlord problem. It's been, I will trash landlords, to be clear. But in this case, it's usually, it was hot for a couple of weeks and then we got a sudden cold day out of nowhere and they didn't turn the boiler on fast enough. And it's sure. Like, okay, well, that's just living in Chicago, unfortunately.
Yeah, my work building is very reactionary that way. Mm-hmm. I always know if there's a big swing in the temperature, the next day in work is going to be real uncomfortable. It's either going to be too hot or it's going to be too cold because the building just can't adjust fast enough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, a giant building like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Giant building with no windows that open.
Oh, yeah, because the thing is, if it gets too hot, I can just open a window. Even if it's winter, I don't care.
Yeah, when the wall is window, you cannot open it.
Well, you can, but only one time.
That's true. You got a good point here.
Can't close it again.
They were actually doing construction on like the front area of my building, and apparently one of the forklifts just like ran into the big glass window that was on the side.
Yeah.
So if you look over, you're like, huh, yep, that's a big cracked window, isn't it?
Huh.
It's not load-bearing, so there's no issues, but it certainly doesn't look good.
I use load-bearing to mean everything else but...
but bears
buildings,
a load.
And I went, oh, wait, no, that's actually just what that means. Yeah, okay.
You know what else load-bearing means? Emails! If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/survivortbt, or on Patreon. I just posted... Oh, go on.
Well, I was going to say, I would argue that emails are load-bearing to this podcast.
That is true. I appreciate your emails so, so much.
Yes.
You provide context that we don't always know. Jared especially doesn't know.
Yeah, I ain't got shit.
And it's very helpful. Thank you, everyone. Keep those emails coming. Speaking of that, before I get into these emails, schedule might be a little flexible the next couple weeks. Jared is jumping into rehearsals?
Tech week. So basically, I will be in tech week, which means every single one of my evenings for an entire week will be occupied. And normally it'd be like, okay, we just record, you know, an extra like one or two on the front end. And then we get right back into it. But then Steven leaves for his honeymoon right when I'm out of tech.
Right. I'm finally going on my honeymoon like a year and a half after getting married. So it's glad to do it. Unfortunate timing that we did it back to back. What I'm assuming is going to happen, and don't hold me to this, is that we're going to do this week's episode. We're going to do two. Next week, we're going to do two. And after that, where it's going to be the episode right before the finale, there might be one episode that week and then one the finale after that. But bear with us. We're trying to get as much as we can.
We're going to, there might be one time we normally have an episode that we don't, or it might go on as scheduled. It depends. Right now, without the finale, Steve and I are recording like 7 times in 7 days or something like that. So we'll see.
Yeah. So with that, if you have information that you're like, I need you to read that, send us your emails early, but make sure to mark the episode which you're talking about in your email so that I don't read it too early.
Emails are load-bearing to the podcast, and the structure will fall apart for a couple of episodes.
You know what? We do what we can. I appreciate all of you who email. I appreciate those who are not emailing and just along for the ride with us. Like, all of you, great. Just want to let you know I'm not ignoring you. Anyway, we have a few emails today. First one from Michael. Michael C. is episode 5 and episode 6 for Gabon. Didn't have too much to add about Kelly other than, yeah, I think she's low-key one of the worst players in the first 17 seasons. Still a funny character for her sound bites, but terrible gameplay.
What if you made Zoe from Marquesas, but bad?
I'm glad Jared mentions Randy's lack of letters from home. You are correct, he did not receive letters.
Oh.
I've been waiting to mention this, and now seems like an appropriate time. But Randy famously did not have a loved one selected to be his family visit. Oh, in the event that they do that in the season, he did request it be his dog on prior applications. Oh, but his dog died sometime before Gabon was filmed.
Jesus Christ.
Wow, Randy. Okay.
So he's legitimately like a bitter, lonely old man. Now I'm just sad.
I'm not sure why Randy is NC. Do With all of his non-contact with all of his family.
Oh,
but okay. He is open about not having any family he cares to see slash spend time with. There's something that happened at the reunion regarding this, so we'll get that there.
Well, then I guess I'm kind of glad that Survivor didn't just like make a big thing of it and rub his face in it, or rub like that it was just like, oh, we didn't get letters, and that happens in the background. If you're not paying attention, you don't notice it, and it's right. Not a whole like, okay, Randy, give a confessional. Or maybe he just was like, no, fuck you.
It could be
absolutely
way.
Not.
Who knows? Yeah, I do appreciate that. At least the way it turned out, we didn't say, haha, fuck you, Randy. You didn't get any letters.
Although now, with this episode, I might have felt a little better about that, but it's still, I don't want to punch down.
No.
Like I don't know what choices Randy has made in his life or who's at fault or anything like that led him to the spot. But even if it's like he's terrible to his family and they went non-contact with him or whatever, we don't need to like make it worse for him,
right?
You know,
here's also the thing, we mentioned it earlier that yes, he had conflict with the only two black people in this season,
which, to be fair, one of them did have a lot to have conflict with, and I think everyone of rational mind would have had conflict with GC,
and one was kind of handcuffed to GC.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't want to outwardly say that he is a bad person.
But then this episode makes it way worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Ace is speculated to be one of the people cut in favor of someone you haven't met yet.
Okay.
He's definitely one of the major character villains of this era, but I'm not sure we needed to see more of him.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I have some more things to say about other people, but I'll save that for when we get to the end point of the game, wherever that may be.
Ace is interesting. Like, he's one note, but it's an interesting note. But I don't necessarily need to see more of that note.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think a simple fix for the final round of the immunity challenge would be to have a reset when the first person falls so that whoever is in the middle could pivot if they wanted to.
Agreed.
Yeah. We're talking about the log rolling challenge. Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Two thoughts about Dan. One is that I agree so much with you how gross Corinne was with her comments, especially in light of mental health struggles that Randy was opening about following Dan's death.
Hmm.
Randy and Dan were close post-show, and Randy was very affected by his passing. Mental health matters.
Yep.
Second, as you've seen by now, I think the Onion Alliance made a grave error in eliminating Dan over Susie.
Oh, yeah.
You don't say. Definitely fatal for Marcus, because we see Dan was going to go. We see where Dan was going to go. He was loyal to Randy and seemingly to Marcus, and I think there was a good chance Maddie would flip to work with Coda, as there's no love lost between him and Crystal. It should have been Susie.
Well, I have been rooting for, like, Kenny and Crystal, so Susie staying around instead of Dan helps them. So it's not so bad that it was Dan instead of Susie, but yeah, Susie's kind of a wet blanket of a contestant.
Also, Crystal's voting confessionals this season have a fun commonality to them. Voting for GC, you gotta go home. Voting for Kelly, fucking forget you, go home. Voting for Ace, you're one of the snakes and I gotta get rid of you, go home.
Huh.
Yeah, I'll share more to come, but she's def cooking something up.
Hell yeah.
Finally, I don't know if you noticed it, but Randy has made some possibly implicitly biased comments a couple times.
Oh, and it's gotten worse.
Yeah, here we go. Notably calling Crystal names like Sasquatch, Bigfoot, T-Rex. Just something to point out in case anything were to transpire in the future between them is clearly no love there is lost.
Yeah, I don't remember him saying those things before. I might have just missed it, those nicknames. But yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's...
Before this episode. I was surprised they had so much beef. I don't remember them being like him being so aggro at her when they were like on original Fong. Like, he was like, my entire tribe are idiots, mm-hmm. and he hated GC. But maybe it's just I was still learning everybody and there was so much chaos that I just got lost in the shuffle.
Could be. Or could be he kept his mouth shut until he didn't have to deal with them anymore.
Yeah,
he was like, oh, finally, I can say all the things I've been meaning to say.
Oh, I can say the dog whistle racist stuff. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Ooh. Anyway, thank you, Michael. Moving on to Carl's episode 6 email. Oh, yeah. When I said people who call basketball a solved game, I did not mean Jared, who I know very well does not watch basketball. I was referring more to people he mentions who report to him the fake news that it is a solved game.
Yep, that's fair.
There it is. Picture the episode. Oh, my God. It looks like Bob is dying.
Oh, yeah, when he's just laying out withering.
Look at that man. Notes, it's a shame that Ace is pretty much forgotten by the Survivor community. He's one of those contestants that could have been a legend if they'd gotten a better roll of the dice. Not only does he go out early here, but there will be another guy next season that, in the words of the Survivor Historians podcast, does the whole get a load of this guy shtick 1,000 times more bombastically, so Ace gets overshadowed.
Okay. Well, it doesn't help that I know that Token Sheens is a good season because I've heard the name and people have said they're excited for it.
Mm.
And Gabon is not as loved. And Gabon for like returning contestants or the viability of returning contestants is tough because it's between Token Sheens and Micronesia,
mm-hmm.
two apparently loved seasons.
Right. The only thing I know of Ace is that he got arrested for beating someone up in a Florida nightclub and was later exonerated.
Oh, okay.
Godspeed, Ace. Being that Dan had two young children at the time and passed away suddenly at home is a common obituary euphemism for suicide.
Yeah.
That's the dark speculation of what happened to him. Obviously, no proof, but it would make his Survivor storyline that much more tragic.
Damn.
For what it's worth, the Gabon cast is well known for disliking each other even after the season ends, but as far as I know, no one ever said a bad word about Dan. That hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Because as much as this is a game, sometimes people forget that, and you can see these qualities on people. You're like, I didn't like that guy. I thought he was annoying. But, like, I don't think people like that deserve all the pain and suffering that might come with it.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Oh, are you talking about, like, fans or each other?
Yes and.
Okay, because I was like, from fans, I 100% agree. From the people that are living with them, it is a game, but also you are living with them
That's constantly fair.
You do know them on a more deep personal level and might not like them outside of the game because you had to stay in camp for several days, depending on how long you're there, with nothing to do when you got to know them closely. That's why we draw the line as viewers of, like, these are characters on a show, but they're real people to the people that are around them.
Yeah, that being said, if you don't like someone's gameplay, whatever, suck it up. After the game, you can still be friends. If someone does something horrid or is, like, an awful person, fine.
Or if you just don't vibe with them.
It's fine.
You don't have to like the people you're on a show with.
You don't have to hang out with these people afterward. No. Yeah.
I'm excited to hear all of the Eagles, the band, not the football team, esque tea after the season of everyone despising each other.
Okay. My favorite subplot of the season has begun to materialize. The Crystal sucks at everything arc. So far we have one, Crystal failing at running up the hill in episode one.
Yep.
She's running up that hill. Two, Crystal being the only person to fall at the water slide in episode two.
Oh, yeah.
Crystal sucking at the boat challenge in episode three. Crystal being shown to suck at the fruit ninja challenge in episode four.
Didn't even catch that.
This one's a little unfair, but I like the gif of... The swing and the miss.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they showed as much of Crystal, like, defending.
No, I mean, the big storyline of that was Ace being really good at it.
Yeah. Five, Crystal dropping out of the Snake Endurance Challenge before all the Coda, besides Susie, including 124-year-old Bob.
I think that's a little unfair to Crystal because all of, like, so many of the Fong people dropped first that Crystal was carrying more weight than most of the Coda people.
I agree. Six, Crystal immediately failing at the balance challenge in episode six.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is what it is. And by the time you read this, she will also have failed at the hold the pole challenge. Maybe she just needed more puzzles.
And cannot start fire.
To be fair.
Almost no one could.
Almost. We only had two people start fire.
And not the two I would have expected.
Yeah. I agree, Jared. Corinne is actually one of my least favorite female contestants of all time. I specify because, unfortunately, a lot of the worst survivors ever happen to be dudes.
Shocking.
Her whole shtick is being mean, unlike Randy, who I enjoy. She's only ever mean in confessionals.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get more of that this episode. Yeah, she just kind of sucks.
and calling the Latino woman loco in the cabeza, which isn't even the correct word. It would be loca. Ooh,
good point.
Though, yes, it means crazy in the head. There you go. I also agree that Sugar starts to be really fascinating to me here. What is her motivation for voting out Ace? Did she never trust him? Did she trust him until Ken convinced her otherwise? Did it have nothing to do with trust and she just felt insulted by what Ken told her?
I think the answer is yes. Because we get the confessionals before that episode of, oh, I know he's a snake, but he's my snake. And I guess Kenny did a good enough job of convincing her that he wasn't her snake anymore. But it is still a confusing arc for her.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's a toxic relationship.
And finally, I like the immunity necklace a lot. Thumbs up.
Me too.
Nice. Thank you, Carl. I'm going to do one more, and then I'm going to save a few for next episode, which I know we will not get many more emails prior to recording.
Why? Because we're recording tomorrow before another one comes out?
Exactly. Hashtag 420 praise it.
Oh, I'll be high on the podcast.
That, I don't know if it's going to go
I'm
well.
I'm kidding. That would be a terrible idea.
I don't know how you react high.
Oh, that's right. I don't get high around you very much.
Because I don't.
Mostly something I deal alone or like with a couple other people, like to wind down or like on a game night or something. Yeah. No, I'm not very social when I'm high.
Okay. That does not make for a good podcast.
Precisely. But yeah, happy 420 to those that celebrate.
420 praise it. Anyway.
It's the only holiday going on that day. Not Easter or anything.
Oh, boy. Last email from Josh. Josh says, based on the podcast, I think you agree with what I've said in the past, which is that any time they merge at a number smaller than 10, it was not part of what they originally planned. The immunity challenge they had them do this episode was pretty clearly meant to be the merge immunity challenge.
Yeah.
As this is the last time it happened in Survivor history, I just wanted to list out the times, and you can say if you agree or not. One, Thailand. They wanted to stop Brian and his team from winning.
I kind of agree. I agree that it wasn't planned. I'm not sure if that was the point because it ended up backfiring so spectacularly, but it's been a long time since I've seen Thailand.
Two, All-Stars. They wanted to prevent the team with the non-popular players from steamrolling the game.
I could see that, yeah. Or just mixing it up for mixing it up's sake, yeah.
Palau. They wanted to completely diminish Oolong down to one person to complete the storyline.
1,000% agree.
Cook Island. They wanted to stop an all-white alliance from dominating.
Also 1,000% agree.
Gabon. They wanted to stop Corinne, Marcus, and Charlie from steamrolling the game.
Yeah, they were worried that the Shrek alliance would make it really stagnant.
Love that you call it the Shrek alliance.
It has layers. Those layers are getting peeled back pretty quickly, though.
I know in the past you've said instances like these don't really bother you in terms of making a good TV show, so I'd ask if you still feel the same way 17 seasons in.
I do, yeah, because I think that the one thing Survivor is consistent in is we are going to mix things up every season. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get into your head that any specific element outside of like the sacred ones of immunities and, well, actually until like 42 or whatever the thing our podcast is named after, like, you know, once you have immunity, it can't really be taken away.
Right.
You know, the way that voting works, the way that tribals work, like outside of those things, like tribe swaps and merges and even like how many people are going to the final, like they are very open about willing to tweak that stuff in a way that still feels fair. Like they're twists, but it doesn't feel like producer stepping in to force a specific result. It feels like producer stepping in to shake up the game generally.
Mm-hmm.
They're not typically doing it to save one specific person or target one specific person. Or even if they do, if it doesn't work, they don't go back and try it again.
Right. I like the idea that Survivor contestants can never feel 100% secure.
Agreed.
Like, if you say, here are my people, these are my people, I don't even have to worry about anything else or anyone else, then you're setting yourself up for failure.
They, going back to the solved game thing, like, they don't want Survivor to be a solved game.
Right.
And they were pre-All-Stars kind of struggling with that at times, where it was like, okay, yeah, you have the tribe that has more people generally just takes the other tribe out after the merge. It is interesting this is the last time that they don't merge at 10, though. I just, like, we're only 17 seasons in, so I'm surprised that that doesn't happen even once from here on out.
Yeah, I think the times where it has shown that they go to less than 10, it I don't even know where I'm going with this. I think it doesn't always make for the best television. Mm. Like, it puts you in this weird spot of, okay, we have to do team challenges, but they have to be really small team challenges. Mm. And they find better ways to mix things up.
Probably late tribe swaps, I would imagine, like we saw in this season and in China. Yes. I know it was late because it was post where the merge was supposed to be, but...
Yes and no.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know. I shouldn't say that this is going to be the last time it's ever going to happen. I think they will do it at some point again, but...
Well, Josh said it was the last time.
Right. Sorry. I mean, like, the show's still going.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, so far.
But boy, do they love their individual challenges, though. And I get it. I do, too.
Yeah. Well, by and large, individual challenges are usually better challenges, at least to watch. Mm-hmm. Easier to balance, too.
I think we're also in a period of Survivor, in modern Survivor, where they've kind of, and I hate to say perfected the format, they've at least been consistent with their format for the last 3 or 4 seasons.
What is the modern view on Survivor? Like, is the fan base happy with where Survivor's at right now? Is it getting more people? Is it more popular than it used to be? Like, relatively speaking, obviously it will never be as popular as like seasons 1 and 2, mm-hmm. but... Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Like, what's the overall perception like right now?
I believe that it is growing.
Okay.
Weirdly. I think COVID hit at the perfect time where things were growing and people they didn't have anything else, so let's go watch Survivor.
Well, and to at like a really natural break point for the show, mm-hmm. too, to do an all-winter season and then have to shut down.
Mm-hmm. And they've hit notes at the right time of, oh, this is really resonating with society. Boom, here's a little thing that we like, oh, this just happened to work out great. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
There are always going to be people in the Survivor community who are like, bring back the old style of Survivor.
Sure.
I want them to divide people by race.
I don't know who's calling for that, Steven.
I want them to put old people back in Survivor, which I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I do want that, actually.
100%.
And by older, I mean, like, 40s and 50s is fine.
They have those.
Okay.
They want older than that.
I don't know. I mean, very specific older people. Bob's doing pretty good.
They want it. People want you to take away advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. In a game that's always fluctuating, I want to see what Survivor does.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to pressure them into doing things, which is weird because right now they're voting for twists and things for the Survivor 50 season.
Ah, okay.
Like, the fans are deciding.
Fascinating. So. A little bit of, all right, you want to smoke a cigarette? Here's the entire carton. Smoke it in one sitting. Like, this is what you guys think you want? Great.
We'll see if you want it.
Let's see how it goes. I'm going to guess whether or not to bring back the Walk of Memories or whatever is not on there.
They have not voted on that yet, but we'll see. I'll finish this email from Josh. My own personal opinion is that it doesn't disrupt the flow of the narrative. It doesn't bother me.
I think it adds to it.
If it doesn't disrupt the narrative.
Mm.
Cook Island is the only one that does because it's the blatant production interference kind of undercuts.
That's fair.
I2's comeback story for me. In this season, it works a bit better because I still do think Marcus made some mistakes that cost him rather than it completely brings being out of his hands.
Well, yeah, of course. He suggested that they all throw an immunity idol into the ocean.
Yes, he did.
That he could have used.
100%. Cool. That's it.
And that Randy would have given him, by the way. That's the crazy thing.
Uh-huh. Oh, anyone could have taken it.
Well, right, but Randy found it first.
Uh-huh.
And I think Randy, like, once they read that thing, Randy goes, here you go. And Marcus is safe, and it's an entirely different game. Which is why the storytelling of that is really, like, it's really smart of setting up Marcus's downfall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the emails we're going to do today. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into the episode?
I will say, just overall vibe check, these last two episodes are very good Survivor. And I'm excited for the rest of Gabon. Boy, was some of that a slog. Was the GC and the Kellys of the world making the season tougher. And I can see why the season, depending on how it ends and where it goes from here, like, even if it's good from here on out, it's harder for a season to have a good reputation if it starts bad and ends well rather than starts well and ends badly, mm-hmm. because then people don't keep watching.
Sure.
That's it.
Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on November 20th of 2008. A few things that happened in the week between episodes, almost all of them economy stuff. The first one is, Elizabeth Warren is appointed to chair a congressional oversight panel for the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act.
All right.
That's, well, it's important because that's, I believe, the stepping stone that got her to run and create the Consumer Protection Finance Bureau. And then, of course, made her a senator from there. Maybe she was already a senator. I don't remember. But the Consumer Protection Finance Bureau, very good organization or wing of the government that doesn't exist right now. The Eurozone, Hong Kong, and Italy all slip into recessions. Japan slips into a recession, and the Dow has its worst day since 1997. So everything was bad.
Everything's bad.
This is the era of those around my age of 30 or like slightly younger, slightly older, like playing video games while our parents were like, what's going on?
This is where I lost my college fund.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I mean, it's fine. I did okay anyway.
Okay.
I chose a not very expensive state school.
We lost our house, but it was like 3 years later. Like, we held on for a little bit.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
Sure was. The top five movies are Zach and Miri Make a Porno, Changeling, Role Models, Madagascar, Escape to Africa, Quantum of Solace, and then the one that was the highest grossing but doesn't have a rank yet because it was the first like 2 days it came out, but we're going to talk about it anyway, Twilight.
Hmm.
Steven, are you familiar with Twilight?
I am familiar with Twilight.
Are you familiar with Tit Soak?
I'm sorry, what?
I've only seen the first Twilight. And I played a drinking game with a friend of mine that's obsessed with the series. And it was finish your drink on Tit Soak, which is this is the skin of a killer, Bella. And it spells out Tit Soak.
Okay.
Anyway, for those of you that somehow don't know Twilight, high school student Bella Swan, always a bit of a misfit, doesn't expect life to change much when she moves from sunny Arizona to rainy Washington State. Then she meets Edward Cullen, a handsome but mysterious teen whose eyes seem to peer directly into her soul. Edward is a vampire whose family does not drink blood, and Bella, far from being frightened, enters into a dangerous romance with her immortal soulmate.
Oh my god.
Steven, what do you think this is rated on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, I'm gonna have such a difficulty with this. I want to say that it's bad because I had a bad experience with it. I watched this movie on a track bus once because I had no other option.
Yes, that's right. The lore.
I think it's bad, but there is a huge fan base of people who love this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go a critic score of 55, an audience score of 60.
You're surprisingly close.
Yes. Yeah.
Critic score of 48.
Okay.
Audience score's a little higher, 72.
All right.
With the consensus being, having lost much of its bite transitioning to the big screen, Twilight will please its devoted fans, but do little for the uninitiated.
That tracks.
Yeah. I have so many problems with that movie, and I think everyone does. Like, the first of which being, hey, you're immortal, and that's a high schooler.
Yeah,
you've been around for a long time.
Right.
That age gap is tough.
I am glad that I didn't have to sit through like the deeper parts of the series where we get into, oh, you're having that vampire's baby and this other immortal being is already like, I'm gonna marry and fuck that baby.
Yeah, grooming.
Yeah.
Yep.
This was a what was this? This was a fan fiction of what series? Or am I thinking one
no,
step
50
ahead?
Shades of Grey is fan fiction of Twilight.
Heard.
That then, obviously, like, they changed details to make it its own thing.
Right. But this spawned out of
9/11. She wrote this because of 9/11.
Right. Was she Mormon? Was that also the thing?
Yes. Okay. There's many layers.
There's many layers to all of this. A repression that we cannot get out of ourselves. Vampire, baby, werewolf sex.
Some fucked up morals that she has around age of consent, I guess.
I guess.
Or just didn't think about it.
That's probably... I hope that that's the case. Stephanie Myers, we have questions for you. Can we get you on the podcast? No, I don't want that because then I'd have to actually put effort into watching anything.
I would do it.
I wouldn't.
If somehow that happened, I would do it.
I would sit there and go, what the fuck were you thinking?
Yeah, me too.
Anyway.
That's why I want to do it.
Anyway, let's get into the episode. Episode 8, The Brains Behind Everything.
Okay, I have a gripe already.
Go ahead.
Not the title. That's fine. Well, kind of the title, I guess. And I don't even know if gripe's the right word. It's just weird. They spent a lot of time in the previous 16 seasons working on making the shell game so it's not so obvious what's going to happen. And yet, every episode that I can remember, at least the last like 4 or 5, the vote has been so obvious from the recap. Like, I knew that, I didn't know it was going to be Charlie, but I had a feeling, and I knew that I knew which alliance won this fight from the recap because of what we focused on. I felt like it could have been Randy, but even still, like the tension around this episode is which of the four of them is going to win this stalemate and which way Sugar's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's answered in the recap. We spend all the time talking about like Randy's tension with Crystal and like there's just really obvious clues in the episode where Marcus goes home. Like, suddenly we just spend the whole recap talking about Marcus and his alliance. Like, okay, Marcus is going home. It's just an odd twist or change, I guess. And it was early season Jeff just being like, oh God, yeah, okay, this happened and fuck it. Like, you could like hear him smoking a cigarette while he's talking about it.
Well, kids, we got a survivor for you.
And now it's like, hey, if you don't want to watch this episode, just listen to the recap of the episode and you'll figure out what happens.
I don't think it's that bad, but it is heavier handed than it needed to be. If you just want to give details to catch you up, fine, whatever. But you're right, it does point you a certain direction in your brain.
And the recaps are really long.
They are really long.
So somehow they're focusing more on very specific things that tell me what's going to happen, and they're much longer, where you could have put in more stuff anyway to make it less obvious or make it about the tension or like the different ways it could go rather than the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. I do kind of like the way that Modern Survivor has gone, where unless it's really, really, really important for you to know, like, oh, this person found an idol at one point, they're probably just not going to do a recap. They'll just get you right into the episode.
I don't mind a what happened last time, like literally last episode,
mm-hmm.
but they're going back multiple episodes to pick out things that are important for this episode.
Right.
Which is, I almost want like a post cap. I almost want this to be at the end of the episode of like, here's the steps of how we got here.
This is why this happened.
It would be stupid and redundant. We don't need that. But like, that's what it feels like almost. Also, one quote from Jeff, some of the Coda players have not been gracious winners. Literally just Randy.
Some of the Randys have not been gracious winners.
Just Randy. No one else on the tribe was mean about it.
Yeah.
Even Corinne wasn't mean about it.
It's true.
And then they just show footage of Randy being a dick.
Yep. Oh, okay. So we start this episode with Ken talking about how at Tribal Council, the Crystal in me came out. I had to stand up for myself. I learned from my last 7 tribals. Man, 7 tribals in a row, I think he said.
Oof, yeah.
Rough. And then Bob outwardly to everyone in his tribe, I assume that if we go again, I'm next, right? I'm history, even though I teach science. That's a little joke, you see.
That was a confessional, and it was so funny.
It was so funny. I love Bob.
It almost was Office-esque, where they leave the shot hanging for a couple seconds afterwards, where like usually confessionals are very tight, like they get exactly what the person's saying and then cut immediately to the next thing. And this one, they just like left it hanging in that, like I said, the Office or like What We Do in the Shadows style.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny.
We flip over to Fong, we get tree mail, and it's still a red flag. That's promising, right? It means we're still in tribes? And it's golf. We love golf, right?
It's...
Are you a golf person, Jared?
No. What about me makes you think I'd be a golf person? I did caddy when I was like 13 years old. So I have weird lore.
I was going to say, you have experience then.
Yeah. I don't like it. I just did it because I needed money and no other place will hire a 13-year-old.
You're right.
And
probably for the best.
Yeah. The way that they did it was fucked up in that you had to sit on a bench and just wait for somebody to pick you. But that also means that like the people that did it often got picked first, so you'd just be sitting there for no pay waiting for somebody to get you. it sucked.
And it's not payroll through the place, right? It's
I don't remember.
They're tipping you?
It was tips. I think we also made like a flat rate, but I think it was more like a stipend. Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird like legal carve out. Oh, you forgot to mention the intro has changed.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
We did the China thing again, where everyone that got cut before the jury isn't in the intro, and now it's the tribes and the jury, and then they'll go to the merge tribe and jury.
That makes sense. Yeah. So Corinne says, you know what? As long as Charlie, Marcus, and I are still intact, I don't care who goes home from that other tribe.
They really played it up, huh?
Cut to the reward challenge and the meme reaction.
There it is.
There it is. It's the reaction to Marcus being the one voted out. So Corinne covers her mouth. Sugar covers her mouth. Big ass smile from Maddie. He's so excited.
I love it.
It's perfect.
It's so good. I have seen that reaction gif so many times. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I didn't remember who it was and like how I don't know. They were just people. I hadn't seen the season, but oh, I love that gif.
Yes,
Maddie's really leaning into his Joker, era. I literally wrote in all caps. There's the meme.
There's the meme.
And I write with pen and paper, so I wrote in pen in all caps. There's the meme.
You drew out the entirety of the Wolf of Wall Street meme. There it is.
There it is.
I can't whistle like that, but you get the idea.
Is that Wolf of Wall Street?
I have no idea.
Okay, you're just making it
up. I thought so.
I just know it's Leo.
It is Leo. Good old Leo. Anyway, Corinne's reaction is so heavy that Jeff has to be like, Corinne, you look miserable. I'm pissed. Marcus doesn't deserve to leave the game. And then Ken goes, who does deserve to leave the game? What do you mean? It's a game.
I agree with Kenny. Also, shut up.
Yes.
A lesson to be learned. Kenny's, in this moment, and in his tribal last episode, is almost, there's a little bit of Eliza in him, of like, I agree with everything you're saying, and I also think you shouldn't be saying.
But you're saying too much, my friend.
You're saying way too much.
And I think Susie jumps in too, of like, who should have gone home then? Like, what do you want from this?
Well, I mean, if we're being like, And deserved is not a convention I like on Survivor. But let's be real. Like, Marcus provided more to his tribes than Susie did.
You're right. But that's not what Survivor's about,
baby. That's
not
what Survivor's about.
So we're playing golf, but we're playing slingshot golf.
This is a cool challenge. And in the seasons that they don't go to islands, this is what I think I've been missing. It feels like they've taken like previous challenges outside of things like rolling a boulder. They've just taken challenges that could have been done on an island and put them in a grassland instead. This is a challenge that can't be done in Micronesia.
Yeah, they have a large, open, flat area.
Yeah, use it. It's cool. This is a great challenge.
It's fun. And it's fun to watch, too.
Yeah. And it's easy to watch. There are some challenges that look fun to do, but they're impenetrable to us as viewers.
Yeah. So we're playing golf, best 2 out of 3 holes. You're taken, if you win, you're taken to a Gabonese village where you get a meal and an overnight stay. Great. Corinne sits, and my immediate first note is, dang, Bob's good at this.
Bob is good at this.
His motion of the, all right, I have it locked in. I'm going to pull back, but I'm not going to like use muscle strength to pull it back. He uses his body weight and just falls to the ground.
He literally just
runs
backwards.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's pretty good.
And of course, Bob would Yao Man it, of like, okay, I've found a way to outthink this rather than outmuscle it.
So, Bob, great job. Coda scores first on that first one.
I just want to say the landscape here is just stunning.
It's so beautiful.
So beautiful. And the mushrooms or whatever they were that were sticking up out of the grass are so cool. And
I was trying to figure out what those were.
I think they were mushrooms from the shape. But regardless.
I'll take your word for it.
I don't know, man.
I was trying to figure out if it was like elephant dung or whatever.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but I was...
Maybe mushrooms growing out of elephant dung.
Ooh.
Those are the ones that'll make your brain do things. The ones that grow out of poop. But yeah, no, it's so cool. It's so cool. This is using the landscape correctly.
Mm-hmm. On the second hole, Fong has an amazing second shot. Like, it bounces them, what, real close to the hole, like two feet from the hole.
Which tribe?
Fong?
No, which tribe?
Oh, sorry. Fang.
Fang, which is the way that Jeff pronounces it for the rest of this episode. He completely buys in.
Why not?
Even once they've merged in tribal, he says, like, well, back when you were on Fang, for, like, the tribe that did call it Fong. It's such a small thing, but it's just funny. And it's weirdly, like, Jeff is really good about calling things what the contestants and people, like, what they want to be called. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just a thing that hit my ear, and I went, that's interesting.
Yeah. Fascinating, like, Mr. Jeff.
Yeah. Like, GC, okay, you're GC, I don't care. Oh, Ace, you're Ace, I don't care. Your dreams, okay, I don't care. It weirdly sets the groundwork for him being a trans ally. Of like, how do you want to be identified? What do you want to be called? Great, okay, I don't care. Moving on.
Wow. Okay, Jared. You're pinging things in my brain from way later seasons of Survivor, man.
Huh, okay.
We'll get there in like 10 years.
Sure.
Anyway, we tie it up because Kenny's chip was almost there, but not quite. So, 1-1, last hole, and... Man, Fang. No, I'm confused in my brain. Fang.
You can just call him Fong. It's fine.
No, we've committed to the bit.
Okay.
Fang has some good shots here to the point where they're up literally 6 inches from the hole.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is sink it and they win. And the arguing here between Maddie, who is holding the center bit and the ball, and Randy on one side. And who's on the other side?
Charlie?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So first of all, I want to give Kenny credit because he got really fucking close on this shot. And this was a much harder shot to make.
Uh-huh.
And Fang was very lucky that they were slightly closer and that Kenny had to go first. Also, they had four people in this challenge, but you only had three people at a time, except Coda, where Susie's holding it and Ken's holding Susie.
I thought that was a good way to do it.
Me too. I thought it was funny.
Add some stability to the person who can't really do a whole lot here.
But yeah, Randy and Maddie are fucking bleach and ammonia. And Charlie's just like, guys, calm down.
Guys, can we argue after we finish this?
No, Charlie's like, let's not argue. Let's go happy. Like, yeah. We're going to win. Shut up. Why are we doing this? Yeah. Also, Charlie has crazy eyes. I don't know if I talked about that. Charlie has a little bit of crazy eyes going on.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, it's gotten crazier as the season's going on.
I cannot blame him for that.
I get it.
So, yeah, they're arguing this whole time because Randy's like, hey, just take it and just drop it in. That's all you have to do. You don't screw it up. And Maddie's like, shut up.
He's literally going, shh.
Just let me do this. Just give me more tension. Just keep it stable. And it goes on for way longer than it needs to.
Because Randy's a dick.
And then they make it. And Randy literally goes and kicks rocks.
Yeah. Just be happy, dude.
He's so upset.
He's such a bitter old man. Which was enjoyable for a little bit. And now is growing stale.
Sugar says, Randy, we won. Good Lord. Be happy, man.
I love Sugar. I'm obsessed with Sugar. I want her to come back so bad. I think she's great.
She is good.
And has not had the easiest season.
I agree. I think she's had one of the most difficult seasons.
She's like the poster child or the pinup model.
Ah. Yeah,
for using being underestimated as a strength.
Mm.
We'll talk about more later. But all right. Yeah, she's great.
So Fang wins. They send Bob to exile, hoping that he's going to go find the idol. Because they're trying to save him.
Well, because they underestimate Sugar again. They don't think she has it. And Bob doesn't think she has it.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's like he looks for how long? And I get it. Do your due diligence. We don't know fully what he said. We don't know what the confessional was, of course, in its entirety. But he's like, I don't know. I guess maybe Sugar found it. But it's still this, like, there's just this tone of, like, that idiot couldn't find it. Not malicious, because I don't think Bob's a mean person, but like, no, she's not a serious person. So she wouldn't find the idol. She would just lounge and eat fruit all day. So the idol's still out here and I can't find it. And after looking for several hours, I don't know, maybe I guess she did. That's not even a knock on Bob. It's just like, oh yeah, Sugar has amazing threat management.
And I want to give Bob credit. Of course, he has to go look.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's no reason for you to not go look because one, your tribe already struggled at one challenge. Yeah. Well, I guess it was closer at the other one. So, but you know, if you're going to tribal with that tribe, you're going home.
Yeah.
So,
no, Bob does what he needs to do. It's just the framing around it of like Corinne being like, he'll find the idol. There's not even a like if it's still there. Like Corinne just takes it for granted that it's still there.
Mm-hmm. So then we get to go celebrate on the reward. They arrive to cheering, to dances. They douse them with water and leaves.
They beat them with leaves.
Yeah. Whatever this bowstring woodwind instrument was is so fascinating to me. I didn't understand what was going on there.
I must have missed that while I was writing notes. Say more.
So it looks like quite literally a bow where there is a...
Like a bow and arrow bow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not held like you would hold a bow and arrow. It was held like the watermelon arc of it.
Oh, okay.
And then he was blowing into the watermelon arc of the bow, but also like moving it to change the pitch.
Hmm.
And I was like, I don't understand how this instrument works, but I want to know more.
It sounds like a big ocarina.
Something like that.
Hmm.
But you're manipulating the shape of it rather than covering holes.
Oh, interesting. Like a bagpipe mixed with a flute.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Anyway, I want to know more. Then Corinne gets close to an adorable small child.
So cute.
And tries to pretend that she's not actually, like, she doesn't enjoy this.
Yeah, because she sucks. But the child is adorable.
Maddie openly talks about how stoked he was when he saw Marcus gone.
Maddie, what are you doing? These people, I think the biggest problem with this season, or maybe not problem, like unique like thing about this season, is that these people don't know how to read a room. None of them. None of them.
Mm-hmm.
They will just say whatever. They will burn bridges simply because they like the smell of it. I don't understand.
He is far too open and obvious with this. This is an inside thought, Maddie. It's truly okay to just be happy about it.
Let's go through the remaining contestants and get rid of Charlie and just go through how many people literally will just, like I said, burn bridges for no reason
just
at all.
Just say the thing.
Maddie.
Yeah.
Randy.
Yeah.
Susie.
Not on purpose, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that counts. Corinne.
Yeah. Well, Corinne's interesting because I think Corinne is better about withholding what she needs to say, but then immediately going to confessional being like, fuck this fucking shit.
But then we'll go to her alliance and go after people out of spite.
Yeah, but never to the person like Maddie is doing here.
That's fair. It's, but, yeah, okay.
She's not rubbing salt in the wounds.
Fair. In the same vein as Corinne, also Kenny. Like, Kenny, we get rid of Charlie this episode simply because Kenny doesn't like him.
Correct.
And holds a grudge against him. Mm-hmm. Crystal, to a lesser extent, like Crystal's not afraid to go after somebody. She does not. She does not choose to be diplomatic. So of the nine of them left, or I guess eight when Charlie's gone, that's six.
Mm-hmm. It leaves us with Sugar and Bob.
Yeah, six of the eight people remaining will just pick fights for picking fights' sake, or like do things that hurt them strategically off of only emotion or ignorance.
I'm going to put them in three tiers. You have the Sugar and Bobs who are like, I don't want any piece of that. I'm keeping my thoughts to myself. You have the Susie and Corinne, which are kind of iffy.
Fair.
We'll start things. And even Ken I'll throw into that. Yeah. And then the rest of them are like, I will fucking punch them in the face if I have to.
If it wouldn't get me kicked out of this game, I would drown them in the lake.
We'll go fold the rivals challenge. Oh, man. Anyway. Charlie, after hearing this, is like, you were probably thinking about the reward, right, Maddie? Like, dude, read the room.
Yeah.
And then goes through the conversation of Ace, Dan, Marcus, we all three power players back to back to back.
I don't know why it's taken so long for people to realize that's what happens around the merge.
Uh-huh. And then also has the moment of, shit, Marcus is gone. Oh, no.
But I'm so horny for him.
A little bit.
What do I do? His eyes get crazier when he talks about Marcus, too. Like, they're crazy regularly, and then they're even crazier when he talks about Marcus.
He loves that man. It's fine. We then go on to the dancing portion. Randy has a great time.
he looks like Will Ferrell in this confessional.
Ooh. I can see it.
Yeah. It's odd. I don't think. I mean, listen, I don't know that woman. Maybe she was into Randy. Who's to say?
Who's to say?
Maybe she's like, it's been a long time, if ever, that I've seen a white man. Let's give it a shot. It's exotic. Whatever.
He hadn't had someone come on to him in 20 years.
To be clear, she'd be like, that white man is exotic.
Yes, correct. In this situation, he is the exotic one.
Yes. Yeah, in 20 years, Randy? Well, okay. Fair enough.
We understand why, right?
I get it.
It's the Randy in
because
him.
He pushes everyone away constantly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maddie loses himself in the dance.
He really does, too. Watching the footage, like, he really does.
He's off. He's having a great time. And then they all dance into the sunset. We don't see them dance, or we don't see them overnight.
No. I mean, they were drunk, right? I'm assuming that they gave them, like...
They had to have given them something.
Yeah, like, the universal cultural experience is we fermented this fruit so it would fuck us up. So it would make sense.
This isn't the Fiji situation where we're just like eating tobacco nuts and getting like real fucked up. But I'm
we should have asked Eric about the tobacco nuts.
Oh, we should have.
Damn it.
Oh, well. We'll learn for next time. Back at Coda, Ken has to be the man. But we also watch him be stuck on a stick for a really
so
long
funny.
Time.
I wish they would have put that audio of that confessional over him being stuck on the stick. It's a really long time, Steven. They speed it up. It's at least 10 to 15 minutes. When all he had to do was push the boat closer to the stick so he would go over it.
Because he circles... He circles for so long.
I don't even think it's that... it's funny. I don't think it's as funny as you think it is, but the fact that you think it's so funny is making me die.
I do think it's funny because Ken is a smart person.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a moment to be like, the part that's under the water is hooked. Maybe I need to bring it to the part that's higher up in the air.
And he stops moving several times to look at it and try to figure it out.
Anyway, that fishing trip also nets him 3 fish.
Sure. And he's not going to tell a fucking soul at camp what happened.
Nah. I'm the only man at Coda with 2 beautiful women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Canonically horny Kenny. He's come a long way from, this girl who sucks, but she's hot, and so I'm going to hang out with her. And to his credit, he never lost sight of the game with that. He wasn't like, and this girl that's giving me attention, I must now keep her in the tribe and protect her. He voted for her. But he's just canonically horny.
He is a gamer boy.
And it also seems like he's an equal opportunity canonically horny person, where like, it doesn't matter who the woman is, if they're around him and they're paying him attention, he's into it.
Hey, you know what? As the token straight man on the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, as we've established before, I hope I'm not out of line here.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, it's funny because I guess I'll just do this. I lean more like pan and bi, and the journey of that has been interesting. Of like, well, straight ish, but not really, but this and that. And
we don't like labels,
but
is
I don't
what we're
like.
Saying.
I also like it's. I've never like come out or anything. It's just like gradually happened. And the point sure. Like, I guess that's what it is now.
All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was.
I made a bi joke last podcast.
You did. That's why I felt comfortable saying this. Anyway, women be attractive.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm still pretty far. Like, I'm.
Oh, no.
It's not 50-50. I'm still pretty far on one end of the Kinsey scale, to be clear.
I think we can all agree. Well, the two of us all in this room can agree. Women be attractive.
Women be attractive.
Handshake, please.
Yes. There
nice.
We go. Your hands are so soft.
That is a weird comment to make after the conversation we just had.
Oh, we're going to do this like 7 more times this week.
We are. And we have the section where Bob goes and looks for the idol. Yeah, we get it. No idol. But then he goes to work making an idol. And this looks pretty good.
2 things. Yeah, the opening shot of this with like the snake going around the clue was just a really cool shot and good on the cameraman that yep. don't get enough credit sometimes. Yeah, that fake idol is really, really good. That fake idol looks almost better than the real idol. And he does it. He's fucking like the dude from, well, he's not, I don't know if he's fucking dudes, but he's like the dude from Gilligan's Island. Like, he's just the professor or whatever. Like, he's just doing it from like tree sap.
Yeah.
Ozzy carved a stick.
It looks much better than Ozzy's stick.
Most things would, but it looks better than like some real idols.
Yes.
Crazy.
I agree. And he does a good job here.
Good for him. It means nothing at the end of the day.
You don't know that.
Well, okay, so far it means nothing.
Correct.
He did it to try to like, he did it to try to save himself on New Coda if it came to that.
Yep.
It wouldn't have worked because Crystal and Kenny know that Sugar has the idol.
Right.
I mean, maybe they'd be like, would they put a second one in the game? But that'd be pretty far-fetched, I think.
I do like his quote kind of headlining this last section of, well, I don't necessarily need an idol. It's like when you're holding up a bank. You don't necessarily need a gun, but if they think you have a gun, they might leave you alone.
Fair.
And I went, no, they're definitely not going to leave you alone.
Well,
they're
not
going to
leave you alone.
Think you have a gun.
But
they're going to be pushing that panic button under the desk real hard.
But I know what he's getting at. The threat of having a gun is equal to having a gun.
Right. The threat of having an idol is equal to having an idol.
Yeah.
Ish.
Ish.
Yeah. So then we get tree mail, and it's an immunity challenge where we got to start a fire. First, Randy says, ugh, Crystal can't start a fire with gasoline and matches. And also, if I see Crystal again, I'll puke.
Well, Bigfoot, and yeah. Then runs through the derogatory nicknames.
Yeah, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Crystal, T-Rex.
One of those is just her name, Steven.
You're correct, but that is the order in which he said them.
True, true. Yeah.
For the record, I don't condone the things that
he says
here, even though I used it as the bit at the beginning.
Yeah, we're making fun of Randy, not making fun of Crystal.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Crystal is, like, a very attractive and athletic person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need to necessarily rehammer it home because we kind of ended up talking about it in the intro bit, but it's really gross. It's
yeah.
really gross in the context of everything, especially of like everything else he says about her and GC, about the fact that he's like, you made living on Fong a nightmare, which is more about tribal, but like, so did other people there, and Crystal gets all of the burden of that. Like, hey, you got in a fight with Maddie today.
Uh-huh.
You don't hold that grudge against Maddie. So what's the difference between Crystal and Maddie?
I can think of a few things.
I can think of a couple things.
Anyway, at the immunity challenge, we walk in. Hello, you're merged. Congrats.
Merging at the immunity challenge is weird.
It is weird, but they already had the merge feast, kind of. So
that's also weird.
I'm kind of okay with it.
It's fine. It's just like, oh, yeah, you really didn't plan this.
They certainly didn't have any more opportunities to do team challenges.
No.
So I guess we're merging now. Anyway, it's the classic, you're building a fire. You got to burn through a rope. First person to do it wins individual immunity.
And Bob's like, I'm the luckiest guy in Gabon. I was like, you are tied for luckiest guy in Gabon. Maddie is also very lucky.
Also very lucky. So we see this challenge get dominated by the two most obvious people, correct?
Yeah, obviously.
Susie and Sugar.
I think the only person I would have been like less expecting to do well is Crystal. And that's just off of previous history.
Fair. Yeah, it's Susie gets a fire pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, and actually, now that I'm thinking about it, this makes a lot of sense. Because Susie's whole thing was like, I need to work hard in camp.
Uh-huh.
Of course she's going to be good at making a fire. She's probably been making all of the fires.
Uh-huh.
Good for her.
Good for Susie.
Oh, that's the other thing, too. Hey, Randy, why doesn't Susie have your hatred? You've hated her in previous episodes.
Uh-huh.
And I know maybe there is some, and maybe you don't get it because she has immunity, so she's safe, so it doesn't matter. But, like, interesting where you choose to put your ire. It actually reminded me, obviously this one I feel like is more racially coded, and this the example I'm use is not, but remind me a little bit of Shane in Panama in Exile Island.
Mm-hmm.
Where Danielle would say something and he'd be like, God damn it, Courtney.
I'm over here.
Like, you have the wrong target for your ire. But anyway. Oh yeah. And sorry, I wish that Fong had been blue and the merge had been red, only because the reward challenge, they got these like nice red like bikinis and skirts and all this stuff. And now they have a blue buff. And I'm like, that would have looked really good with the red buff. And that seems to be the color that's more important. That is literally like the Fong people's color in Gabon, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
That would mess it up with like the Fong tribe being blue and all of that. But just a small nitpick.
Fair. I don't know. I don't really have any issues with it other than the fact that, yeah, they now have to mismatch their nice new clothing that they got.
Not an issue, just a preference.
Okay.
Yeah, and the art department popped off with this challenge. Like, there was really cool stuff all over this challenge area.
Sure. Maddie cuts himself while doing this.
Yeah.
Sometimes you forget that, like, brandishing a knife at fast speeds to try to get a spark can easily slice up your hands.
I never forget. Watching them hack away at that flint makes me nervous every single time. Especially when they're doing what Maddie's doing, which is holding the flint in their hand fully. Don't do that.
Well, may have learned his lesson on that one.
Yeah, but will future contestants learn their lesson?
Nah. And Sugar catches up a little bit. She gets pretty close, but obviously hers wasn't burning when Susie's starts going.
Susie's standing behind the fire at one point just doing the Jack Nicholson, like, yes. I'm like, add more to it, but whatever. Nah. Who cares?
And so Susie wins. And now they're told that you're going back to the former Fang camp.
Not the better of the two camps.
No.
Weird that they're getting told which one they're going to instead of getting to choose.
It is kind of weird. I wonder if they just had like a lease of, hey, you can use this spot for so long. And they're like, well, now we got to go to this other one. Because they get all the rewards and all of their personal items. So,
and more food and all that stuff.
It wasn't an attempt on the show to like, all right, now the next few days are going to be real difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And also good timing for them to do this because I did feel a little bad for... who were the three? Randy, Corinne, and Charlie that were at Fang and had no food through no fault of their own.
Actually, you know what it probably was? The Fang camp has the better scenery. Like they can
You're right.
They can go back into that like wooded area with the water and the elephants hanging out.
Yeah, they have the like reeds that we saw Crystal and Kenny hang out in last episode.
They're probably banking on better shots going there.
For sure, especially with the HD being like the focus of the season.
Yeah. So then we get back to camp and Randy makes it very clear we're drawing a line in the sand. It's either going to be Crystal tonight or it's going to be me tonight.
Wrong.
Very wrong.
I thought for sure if they left this in, it would be Crystal or him, but okay.
We get back, there's tons of food, but we jump right into strategy. Charlie says, hey, we have a 4 and they have a 4. Really, it all hinges on Sugar once again.
Again. And like, again, credit to Sugar, who I am becoming more and more obsessed with, to be in the middle multiple times. And sometimes being in the middle can be a very bad thing. Like, it's good for that vote, but it can be a problem later down the road. It can put you on the bottom of the alliance. It can put, if you aren't fully committed to the side you go towards, it can put a target on your head. And she has managed it so well both times.
Can I talk about how both sides of this pull for Sugar really botched this?
I agree, but please, you first.
Because right away, we get Corinne trying to pitch it to Sugar. And she's like, we need you to come with us. We want you to do this. You're going to be one of us. And Sugar's like, I can't live with Randy. Randy sucks. And I just don't know what to do. And Charlie's like, no, we need him. We cannot get rid of him. And then Corinne to us says, not only do I have to listen to Sugar, I have to pretend to like what Sugar says. She's an idiot. I was mean to her every day, and the one day I'm nice to her, she's going to be on our side.
And you're wrong. And I think the lesson of this season, that's not a new thing, but something to like remember going forward, is you don't treat the people that aren't in your core alliance, inside of the alliance, as expendable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will fucking know. Even if you're not outwardly showing it, like, the Susies and the Sugars are going to pick up on it and they're going to flip on you.
Right.
And that's what happens. Like, there is no world in which the old Fang members should be in tribe. The old Fang members should be in control of this tribe. That they should be in control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. because they treated Susie as a person and they treated Sugar as a person and you guys did not.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that.
So Corinne and Charlie don't want to listen to Sugar's, like, hey, and it makes sense that they don't want, they don't want to get out Randy because Randy is part of them and that,
he's
would,
a vote. Yeah.
That would destroy them.
Yeah.
But you have to give some give and take. Like, who of the other four would you want out?
Yes. I will give Corinne a tiny bit of credit in that she said, we'll go for him next.
Uh-huh.
Which strategically, if you need to get somebody out in your own alliance, like, that is what you need to
That's
do.
The
like,
correct
we need
answer.
Him this time. We'll get him out next vote.
But on the other side, when she's talking to Ken, she's really begging for it to be Randy. And Ken's just like, no, guys, Charlie is the brains. We need to get out Charlie. And I truly think he's running this show. And then he talks to us like, no, he stole my note and I was pissed. So I want him gone.
So many personal grievances
yeah.
this season. Like a season driven almost entirely by personal grievances.
And Sugar recognizes all this that...
Sorry, I want to say one thing about Kenny's confessional there. He calls himself a rat. He's like, I'm like a little rat. Like, okay. Sure.
Go off, Kenny.
Weird way to describe yourself. Especially at the time. Like, now I feel like rats have kind of gotten like a PR, like rebirth and that, like, people are like, oh, rats are so cute. But, like, in 2008, 2009, people were not that big on the rat train.
It's because of the Chicago rat hole.
It is the Chicago rat hole. For those of you that don't know, the Chicago rat hole was a thing in, like, the sidewalk of a part of Roscoe Village, which is a neighborhood in Chicago, where a rat had gotten squished into the cement, and, like, they obviously dug the rat out, but it left an indent, like, when you, like, walk with your feet into wet cement. And it became a bit of a cultural phenomenon for a couple months. We probably talked about it
on
the podcast. But if you didn't listen to those seasons, like, people would have brought, like, offerings and sacrifices to the Chicago rat hole.
All this to say, this was, like, not on a public... it's a public street.
But yeah, it's a public street.
Like, right outside of people's houses, though.
Yeah, that's how sidewalks work.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
I would feel weird, though, if I were those people, like, who lived in the houses adjacent to the rat hole.
Well, they were lobbying to get it destroyed and eventually did, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I was seeing somebody at the time. I was like, we need to go kiss over the rat hole.
Why?
For Valentine's Day, we kissed over the rat hole.
Sharon. Okay. Well, yeah. I've learned something new about you today. Fascinating.
Do it for the bit.
Do it for the bit. Whatever. Yeah, I'm all for it.
We did other things, too. Like, we went to dinner and stuff.
You did other things over the rat
hole?
Shut up.
No. Shut up.
Jared.
I'm deeply uncomfortable now.
Okay, anyway. Sugar realizes that, hey, everyone's trying to win me over here. I'm the lady of the hour, but I don't trust any of these people. Like, I don't owe anything to anyone.
She's so smart.
And I'm gonna go with what works for me.
We've seen so many people fuck this up. Good job, Sugar. Keep being underestimated. We stand Sugar on this podcast.
Also, they then named the tribe No Bag, which is just Gabon backwards.
But No Bag sounds stupid.
It does sound stupid.
Jumble it up. Do something else.
No, we're going No Bag.
I hate it. This is one of the worst tribe names I can remember.
On to Tribal Council. At Tribal Council, Charlie and Corinne were so happy to see Marcus.
Yeah. Does Corinne also lust after him?
I think she was, well, maybe.
Maybe more
know.
Friends, but...
He's an attractive man.
They're both, like... He's, like, their idol. It's weird.
He would have won that game had he stayed in.
Maybe. If he makes it to final tribal, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. Also, I do want to say that the sign, though, for No Bag is quite good. The sign they made is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yes, they're happy to see Charlie again.
And then we just get... right out into it. Well, one, we talk about the reward challenge, about how, why Randy got so upset during the challenge. Like, he had a shot and he would have made it 9 out of 10 times. Had he done what I was telling him to do, which was just carry the little holder and just plop it forward, it would have been 10 out of 10.
Which means that must have been allowed, right?
I think so, yeah.
So then, yeah, I mean, I agree with Randy on, like, the correct strategy. Boy, the execution's bad.
Not good. And that bleeds into Crystal talking about, hey, why, Randy, do you have issues with me?
No, not that. Why do you, Randy, have issues with me, Crystal?
Yeah.
And then continues to talk in third person the entire time. That's just the funny, like, she doesn't say you and me. She says Randy and Crystal every single time through the rest of the conversation.
Randy goes, you want a list? You made life on Fang a living hell. It's Fang. And you and GC both did. You ran the tribe like it was a gang.
Woof.
Fairy coded.
Whoa. That's first of all, it's not true. I mean, like, we don't have the full footage of all of the days out there. That's not what I saw.
Nah.
I didn't see Crystal and GC running it like a quote-unquote gang. I saw GC being an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you arguing with GC. And there is a little bit of, like, because it's coded, obviously. But it feels like Randy's being like, because you two are black, you are the same. Like, GC's sins are your sins, Crystal. Because you are both black and he is not here. And so I'm yelling at you about it instead of GC. And I hate it.
It was pretty clear and obvious what was being said there.
Yeah.
And you caused division and are the reason we lost all those times.
They caused division, Randy? That you yelled at your tribe this episode over dropping a ball in a hole. They caused divisions?
I will give Randy the slightest amount of credit. He was better at holding his tongue when he was on the original Fang.
That's true. Yeah, more time will make... And GC was not good at it. But
no.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, once he transitioned to Coda, he lost any sense of that. And then Crystal has to say, I don't regret any of the emotions. I've cried when I lost. I cried when I won. This is just Crystal. I don't know what you want from me, man.
Yeah, she's getting dangerously close to take me or leave me, which is an attitude I fucking hate. Like, you should take some criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not crossed that line yet.
Okay. And then Charlie goes on a little bit of a monologue here about how much he likes Ken and we're getting to know each other. And it's, I don't know, we're pretty good friends, I think.
Are you?
Randy says Kenny's grown up. He's a man now.
I mean, I kind of agree. Like, I think Kenny was always strategic, but he really, his, like, metamorphosis in this game has been really fun to watch.
Sugar talks about being away is a good time for people to talk about her, and she has no idea what's going on and what people are saying about her.
You're missing something that's pretty funny in there.
Uh-huh.
Which is Jeff being like, is there an advantage in being at Exile so often in that you couldn't rub people the wrong way like Crystal and Randy? And she basically goes, no, Jeff, I'm not annoying. Like, she says it differently than that, but that's basically what she's saying. It's like, I wouldn't rub people the wrong way because I'm not mean to people.
Mm-hmm. And then we vote. And I have the note, Jesus, Randy's vote.
Yeah, he just says, bitch.
Yeah. He writes CC. And then says, bitch.
So hateful.
Sugar's crying through this whole thing. Like, she's crying before she votes. She's crying during the vote.
And for the seventh time this episode, like, good job, Sugar. Like, it is a tough thing to be able to feel those emotions and not, and still be able to act logically. And uh-huh. I think she does that. And we've seen people that can do one or the other, and doing both is very hard and shows a level of maturity that is beyond her age.
Chari, once again, just for one last time, gives a thirsty message to Marcus. You took out my Marcus. You have to go.
He is a caricature of himself. Even in his post-game confessional, he's still like, but I get to go be with Marcus.
And then for the first time in a long time, Jeff has to stop his reading of the votes to be like, who wrote this?
First time since Thailand, I think.
What do you mean, CC?
Who's CC?
Yeah.
Because, like, does Jeff know Charlie's last name off of the top of his head? Probably not. Also, CC could be a nickname for somebody. Like, come on, Randy.
And, like, sometimes you can, if you're unsure, you can go to the confessional and the person who is holding the camera can be like, yeah, he met this person. But if he just says, bitch, what do you do there?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious who he was voting for.
It's 100% obvious.
But you need confirmation.
Correct.
You do not want to assume with that kind of a thing.
Yeah, so he scolds Randy for that one. If you don't want people to know who you're voting for, write out the full name.
Which, I mean, to be fair, for the impacts of the episode, everyone knew who Randy was voting for. It's no secret.
So then Charlie is voted out on a 5-4 line.
They did something they haven't done in a long time, which is all of one person's votes first and then run the table for the other person.
They front-loaded the crystal votes.
But I never was really in doubt of who was going home.
No. How do you think Charlie does in Future Survivor?
I don't know, man. It's tough. He didn't get to play a ton of the game. Like, it feels like the Shrek Alliance, like, peaked too early. Mm. And also just, like, did a bad job of valuing the people around them. But he's the one who seemed to have a good head on his shoulders. He's the one that's like, Randy, stop yelling at Maddie. Please, for the love of God. In a season without Marcus for him to lust after, like, there's a possibility he could go far. I didn't see anything from him strategy-wise, though. I was he running the Alliance after Marcus left? It feels like kind of nobody was.
I think he stepped up, certainly, to be the brains of that.
Okay. He says in his confessional, he's like, I thought I was going home first. I don't think he's ever going home first. I don't think he's a first boot type of a player. But I think his range is one of the wider that we've seen. Like, there's no specific point in the show where he's the most vulnerable. Because he's not a challenge liability. He's pretty good at threat management. Like, it's not like a Todd situation from China where it's like, that guy is running the game right there. But he could. I think he could actually run the game. So, like, I'm kind of, like, copping out here, but, like, really anywhere between, like, I would say he's not, like, the first two votes on his tribe, usually, just with, like, the fodder that gets put on there. But he's anywhere from a winner down to third vote.
Mm, okay.
He has a really wide range.
Nice. Well, he is not coming back.
Is he the one that dated Todd, actually?
I'm not sure. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, because I remember I don't remember if it was Gabon or Token Sheens that Todd and... That was like, oh, Jason had the photo shoot in the bed with Todd and a future contestant that Todd dated. And I thought it was this season, but yeah.
Could be. But no, he does not come back. He is married, not to Todd, but is married, has a child. It seems to be living his best life. Apparently the Ponderosa web episodes of him and Marcus were pretty funny. Charlie may be best known for his friendship with Marcus, which CBS is milking on the Ponderosa web
friendship episodes.
He talks in this reality blurred interview that every second he was out there, he was in heaven. He was having a great time. He was told by people who had information like, expect the worst when you go out on Survivor. He's like, I had a great time.
Awesome. I kind of wish he'd come back then. Like, if you had a good time the first time, like, come on back.
Yeah. I just don't think he got the opportunity to come back.
He didn't shine.
He doesn't fit in the heroes versus villains narrative.
No.
He's not really an all-star.
No.
He would be a second chances situation in my brain.
I agree, but being somebody that wasn't necessarily a standout on a season that's already unpopular means his chances were never good.
Were slim to none. Yeah. And... there's a Survivor Reddit thread that says, what happened to Charlie from Gabon? And the top comment, I hope he married Marcus.
I do think he's a more compelling character and more likely to succeed without Marcus.
Interesting.
There's a Legally Blonde, the musical. There's a line where it's like something like, you know, when that guy enters the room, your IQ drops by 40 points, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that is kind of what it feels like. Like, he was so distracted. He was so boy crazy that it's just, you know, what do you do?
Fair.
But then again, his tribe didn't really have to play the game until they lost the game.
That's true. He didn't really have that much strategy game going on.
That was his third tribal.
Yeah.
Like, and one of them was a forced double tribal.
Fair. Your protagonist of the episode?
I think it's Sugar. Being in the middle, yeah, you can make an argument for Randy, but nothing really happens to Randy. It feels like Randy's going to go home next episode, and this is setting up that. but it's what will Sugar do? And we get a lot of people talking about Sugar while Sugar's like, it's all incorrect information. Like, Kenny thinks he's pulled the wool over her eyes, and yet she actually, Maddie, whoops, gave her information that makes her less aligned. And Corinne being like, she's an idiot, but no.
Is she, though?
No, not at all.
No.
But letting them think that is very, very good idea.
Cool.
This was the episode with Rudy's wife as the tribute at the end.
Correct.
I noticed that.
Yeah. I did notice that, too.
Yeah.
All right. Then we've talked for a while, so let's shut this down. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote today?
Yes, a instrumental funk band I found called Mountain Mocha Kilimanjaro.
Okay.
It's no secret that I really like Cowboy Bebop.
Right.
And this feels like Cowboy Bebop-esque music.
All right.
Yeah. What about you, Steven?
I don't have anything super specific right now, so I'm going to promote... One, thank you, audience, for sticking with us through all this. Thank you to new people who are joining us. We had a nice little influx of people coming in. So big thanks to all of you for following us through this adventure that we're going through.
Two new reviews, so thank you, guys.
Hell yeah. And then two, always having a cookie on hand. Always got
to
have...
Very important to
me. Very important. I appreciate having a cookie. There's an Oreo jar out there. It's calling my name right now.
Oh, I thought you meant for your diabetic friends.
Oh, I guess that too.
God damn it.
For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
For my host Steven, this is Jared.
Bye-bye.
Cookies.
Cookies.